We are back once again, 280th time. I had to go back and make sure that was right. It's hard to believe. 280th time, Parish of the Patriots. Thank you for joining me. If this is your first time here, I hope you'll stick around for the whole show. Give it a chance. We do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly, very roughly sometimes, the halfway point of the show. I encourage you to listen to that. Even if you're not really big on it, say, I ain't going to listen to it. Give it a shot. If you don't like it, you don't like it, but give the whole thing. I think you'll get some entertainment and maybe some information. It'll be informative and entertaining. It ain't going to be like going down here to your local MCC church. We're going to have fun. It's going to be informative, I hope. If you get something out of the show, I do pass around the plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I've got the ultimate privacy coin. That's right. Snail mail. That's what I've got. I've got the ultimate privacy coin. I got snail mail. The address right here. Look at the description. Read through the little description. And right there. There's no other thing. Don't be looking at Bitcoin addresses or something and saying, oh, well, I can send Bitcoin there. That's not me. Those were put there by Sven before he went away. So, yeah. You got snail mail. Figure out how to address an envelope. It ain't hard. It's the ultimate in privacy coinage. And I do really appreciate it. Let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, the gay month has passed, finally. How have we come to this? God bless. That's from Triangle Whip. Yes, we finally, we have finally gotten past the rainbow. The rainbow month, mercifully. GPD, I hope before I die, I know that Washington, D.C. and Israel have been turned into giant radioactive craters. Mr. T. Now, Mr. T, I know. You know, it's disheartening. It really is. You know, because everybody wants to be like, everybody wants to think like the place they live are the good guys. You know, nobody wants to look around and say, wow. The country I live in, they're the bad guys. Nobody wants to think that. Yet you look at things and it's hard to come. You know, it's hard to come to a whole lot of different conclusions. Tony, I did receive it. Appreciate it. Appreciate it very much, Tony. No note there, but I did want to let you know I got it okay. So thank you very much. And finally, hey, Grimps, some dead presidents for the show. Sometimes I wish politicians and news presenters could be wired into lie detectors programmed to give them a nasty shock each time they said something they knew to be untrue. It probably wouldn't stop them, but it would be funny to watch. All the best. That's from Peter. You know, and yeah, they would just be like in a constant state of shock because that's all they do. This lie. This is one of those rare times, by the way. I normally record this show over the weekend, and I was going to record it. I had things going on Saturday, so I was going to, which I usually record on Saturdays. So I was going to record it Sunday. Then of course the whole Trump thing happened, so I wanted to wait. So this is one of those rare occasions where I'm actually recording this show on the day that the show is going to air. I got to get this thing done, and I got to get it all cleaned up, everything written up, all the things that go with this. And I got to get it posted up. So this is one of those rare occasions. I got a show up yesterday, the Daily Nationalist yesterday, on the whole Trump attempted assassination thing. I think it came out fairly well, if I do say so myself. If you haven't checked it out, encourage you to check it out. I think it was a pretty decent take on it, if I say so myself. Now, another story came out that is, I think, very relevant. I think at this point it's a safe call that Trump is going to be put in to office this time. He's going to quote unquote win the election. Not because of this. You know, people are like, this assassination attempt is a shoo-in. You remember, those of you who are longtime members of the congregation have been listening to me for a minute. You know what I've said for the past like year or so. So what you're witnessing with Trump and all of this back and forth with all the legal stuff and all the rest of it, I said, you're watching. Remember, the guy's book was called The Art of the Deal. He is publicly negotiating. You're seeing a deal being negotiated and it's being reflected in the public. And if you remember, I said, and I'm not bragging here, I'm just saying, I have said over and over, if you start seeing the legal cases, these cases that they've been bringing against Trump, all of a sudden miraculously disappearing, getting dismissed, then you know they've probably made a deal. And what do we see? I saw a story, and y'all probably seen it too. Yet another one, the documents case got thrown out. And they're like, oh, prosecutors are going to appeal it. No, they're not. No, they're not. All these cases are now miraculously, this has been dragging on for years. And now all of a sudden the courts are like, yeah, no, you can't do these cases. And they're all being tossed. You see, I think this is a pretty good indicator that the negotiations, but for the most part, have wrapped up. The negotiations have wrapped up. So Trump is going to be selected as your next president. He just announced his vice president candidate. You know, and it ain't no better than his last vice president. I'm waiting for him to name his cabinet, and I wouldn't be surprised to see John Bolton in there again. Must be hard. I'm amazed. I continue to be amazed, as y'all know, about, you know, one way or the other, Trump is what you would classify as a polarizing figure. And, you know, he showed up at their convention last night, and all these people were like crying, moved to tears, crying in the audience because Trump is here. It's like a messiah, you know, a messiah figure for these people. And on the opposite, you have the leftists, and he's like, you know, the second coming of everything they hate, their worst nightmares coming true. And it's so silly. It's so silly. And I know all of you have to deal with people in your lives from time to time who are on one side of that or another. The messianic figure or the second coming of Satan, whatever their views. And I'm going to give you a take-home line. You know, because later on, you eventually wind up having to deal with people like this. And I think the best thing you could say is that the people who are running things are not the people you're voting for. I think that is the best take-home line you can get. How do you respond to these people? There's some shit-lib going on and on about how Trump is Hitler and he's going to put everybody into camps, which is all projection, by the way, on their part, or whether you're one of these people and you're bawling because Trump is going to get in there and he's going to save America. How do you respond? I think the best response is the people who are running things are not the people you are voting for. You can, you know, it doesn't matter how you feel about Trump. It's obvious now, without a doubt, that, you know, Biden hasn't been making any decisions for a long time, if he ever was. And what has really changed? You know? So things were able to run right along just fine with a dementia patient in the Oval Office. And yet people act like, I see these people, you know, leftists, and it's like, even after it's been demonstrated that the conspiracy theorists were absolutely right, and now the media are agreeing with them, but pretending this is a new revelation, that Biden doesn't know whether he's horseback or afoot. You know, now these same people will still sit there and say, Joe Biden's been a great president. He hasn't been making any decisions. What do you mean he's been a great president? The people you vote for are not the people that make these decisions. Donald Trump, I'm absolutely convinced. And the first hint was when they rolled the real Biden out there at the debate and let him ramble on, make a fool out of himself. Now the court cases are being dismissed one after the other. I think the deal is pretty much done. And the same people who've been going on now for 4 years about how the election fraud was real, which it, in my opinion, was quite obviously was, and the election was stolen, are going to put that in the memory hole and say miraculously Trump won this time. Like by pure coincidence, somehow. It was stolen before. This time is different because we voted really hard this time. And you know what? You're not going to wind up with much difference at all. from whether the dementia patient is still in there or this guy is still in here. You're going to get more of the same. Don't fall for it. You know, if Trump gets in there, and I think that's a pretty much almost a done deal at this point. If Trump gets in there, you know, it's going to be real tempting for those who are of the personality cult, you know, out there bawling in tears. You see all these boomers at the Republican National Convention in tears because he has walked among us with his bandage on his ear. When Trump's in there and he says, we're going to institute a draft and send you to go fight in Israel, you know, for Israel or the Ukraine or wherever the hell else, those boomers are going to be shaking their finger at their grandkids and saying, you need to go do the patriotic duty. Go join the army. You need to go be drafted. They'll be turning them in to the draft officers to go die for Israel because, after all, this is different. This is Trump. Where if the dementia patient was still in there and did the exact same thing, they would be like, burn your draft cards like we did in the 60s. Well, then again, if it's for Israel, they probably wouldn't. But nevertheless, you get what I'm saying. It is going to be very difficult for them to sell. They already got their recruitment numbers are in the toilet. It's going to be very difficult to institute a draft because their traditional fighting base is white Southerners, white rural people from the Midwest, from the South, and they've antagonized those people to the point they need that. If they're going to need that pool of people, they're going to have more success with Trump in there. That's probably part of what has gone into this negotiation. That's probably one of the cards Trump had to play. There's going to be a whole lot more social pressure if that comes to pass, that, you know, from your relatives and kinfolk to let yourself be drafted to go die for Israel, than if the dementia patient was still in there. It was one thing that the government, you know, oh, you got to go sign up. And you're like, no, I don't want to do that. And, you know, having the support of your family behind you versus your family's turning you in, snitching you out. You got to go fight for our greatest ally ever. The people running things are not the people you're voting for. I find it amazing in all the Democrat, all the media conversations about Joe Biden's obvious dementia state now after the debate disaster. The media continues to craft the narrative of, as he's obviously not there, can he beat Trump? As if he's not president now. Like, you shouldn't be concerned that this guy has no idea where he even is half the time. And he's supposedly the president. Why aren't they worried about that? Because they know. The people running things are not the people you're voting for. So why get so worked up about it? Why get so worked up about who's winning the election? It doesn't make any difference. You know, these people, y'all know I ain't voting. I'm sorry. Yeah. And you all know you got people you work with, friends and family, and they're probably on the personality cult. And they're like, you're going to vote for Trump, aren't you? You're going to get in there and get on that Trump train, right? How do you respond to that? You know, got people you care about and they're all bought into it. They've tried to keep him out. They've even tried to take him out now. How do you respond to that? If you say something derogatory about their Messiah, they're liable to drag you out and verbally stone you. The people who are running things are not the people you're voting for. Just let that sink in. When you realize this, it just makes the world around you look like some kind of insane asylum, some kind of ridiculous theater being played out, and all these people buying into it. It's crazy. It's crazy to see all these people acting like suddenly this is all very real and something's actually going to change. I don't know, man. Anyway, I'm going to change gears from that. I don't want to go on and on about that. There's only so much you can say about it. As far as the assassination attempt, I think I did a pretty good take on it yesterday. Obviously, more information will come out. I will say one last thing on that. I was saying, it's like we've had this long And yet we don't have a picture of this guy except an old high school yearbook picture. There are no pictures of this alleged, you know, attempted assassin guy. Media, of course, going to do everything they can to bury the fact that he's obviously a leftist. You know, trying to do this whole, he's a registered Republican. Like, that means anything. You know, he's obviously a leftist. They're going to do everything they can to cover that up. But again, I'm not going to go on about that. Check out my show from yesterday. I think I had a pretty good take all in all on it. Just going through things as a matter of what we know and facts, things such as that. I was thinking the other day, and we're completely changing gears here, by the way. But I was thinking the other day about how we get set in our routines. Because I find myself caught up in my routines, and I find a certain amount of comfort in that. I look at things, even things people take for granted, even things that are maybe mundane. And I think, why do I do this? Why do we take comfort in our routine when it can lock us into things where, like, we miss opportunities, or we don't go do things that we really should do because for no other reason, it would require stepping outside of our routine. Why is it so difficult to step outside of our routine and do something different? Take a break. Go do this. Go do something completely out of the ordinary. Why is that so difficult? And I was thinking, this led me to think about how we spend the entirety of our lives being trained to routine. We get trained to be in routine. We spend kindergarten through 12th grade. You spend all your time in school being trained to follow a routine. Think about it. You wake yourself up forcibly in the morning. When you're a kid, your parents coming in there beating on your door saying, get up, you got to go to school. You would like to sleep, but you have to get up. You force yourself to get up before you would like to go do something you don't want to do. You go to school, and you have to be there at a certain time. And then when the bell rings, you're allowed to take a break and go eat something really quick, and then you got to go back when the bell rings again. And then finally, when the bell rings, you get to leave. Now, you probably have homework, so now you got to go do some more things you don't like doing. And any violation of this routine, you will face some form of punishment, whether it's simply verbal or otherwise. So you spend your entirety of your childhood, almost the entirety of your childhood, being forged into following a routine. Then you get out of school, and there's more routine for you. You go to work, and what do? Well, it's not a big change, is it? You force yourself to get up in the morning to go do something you don't really want to do. You get there by a certain time. If you don't, you're going to get griped out, which I always find funny. You're paid by the hour. So if you're there, you clock in and they're paying you while you're there doing the job. And when you clock out, they are not paying you. So if you're not on the clock, they're not paying you a dime. And yet if you're late, you know, if your lunch, if you get an hour lunch and you're an hour and 15 minutes, you're 15 minutes late, they'll have this meltdown like it's the end of the world. Like you're somehow sabotaging the company. Why? They're not paying you. Because you violated the routine. See, all that training to keep you in that routine mindset. Maybe that's why so many people still want to believe in the voting thing. It's part of their routine. Every 4 years, we follow the routine and we go through this theater and act like this is the most important election ever. Go to work, follow the routine. When the bell sounds, you can go eat lunch. When the whistle sounds, you get off work. You go home. You have just enough time to shower, eat something. Maybe watch a little TV, go to bed, wash, rinse, repeat. The traditional hours for school and the traditional hour for work are more or less the same. You get these days to yourself, these few hours, waking hours to yourself. The rest are dedicated to somebody else in your servitude while we tell you how free you are. Now, the society we live in is the society we live in, and I know people got to work. Most people just have a job. But free yourself from the routine whenever you can. You know, liberate yourself from the routine. You know, dude, you know, go somewhere different this weekend. Do something that you don't normally do. Hell, call in sick one day. You know, you got that perfect attendance, built up a little paid time off. Well, you probably don't. I don't think we get any of those benefits anymore. Just call in sick. Piss on it. Go do something completely out of the ordinary. Go fish all day. Go call in sick and go and fish. And while you're sitting there on the dock, the lake or wherever, fishing, after calling in sick, ask yourself, why do I feel guilty about that? They're not paying me. I'm not on the clock. If they are paying, if you have paid time off, it's an agreement from them that they will compensate you a certain number of days. But yet, why do you feel guilty? Why is that? Because you've been conditioned. You've been trained to follow this routine, to stay and accept, and in fact, embrace your servitude. You embrace it, and in fact, you take comfort in it, because everything's predictable. You know that tomorrow is going to basically be just like today. There won't be any surprises. It'll be the same thing, which just, of course, rots your mind into complacency. It just numbs your mind. Why do you need to think outside the box? Why do you need to think? What's there to think about? It's not going to be anything new tomorrow. It's going to be the same thing. It's going to repeat it. There's no need to exercise your mind. In fact, the routine is best described as mind numbing. And if your mind is numb, it's not getting exercise, it's atrophying, and you're just going through the motions. Now, the tragic thing of this is that every single day, time is going by. The days are going by. Every day that passes, you are one day closer to death. And it's going to get here really fast. And you look back and it's like, what did I do? What did I do with that time? My mind didn't think about it because your mind was numbed. Mind was numbed to the routine. It's one of the great things they sold people on. It's a lie. Let me phrase that differently. It's not a great thing, but it is an amazing thing just looking at it, you know, from a detached standpoint, just looking at it analytically. It's an amazing thing that they sold people on the idea that slavery was abolished. You know, It's an amazing con job. If you ask any American, when was slavery? Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves and finally brought justice. Slavery has never gone away. In fact, all they did was lower the price of labor. Years ago, Sven Longshanks did a show. I don't even remember if it was, I don't remember under what, you know, show title it was, but he did a show or several shows on slavery. And he pointed out, you know, that the slaves had to be provided basically housing, health care, food. And you sit here and say they conned people into saying, well, we abolished slavery. But what does your job provide you? Health care? Housing, food, only healthcare, maybe not so much anymore. See, when literal slavery was going on, they had to provide your healthcare. It'd been rudimentary. Healthcare is rudimentary for everybody at that time, but you were provided healthcare. Now, a lot of jobs, you don't get any healthcare. You might get on the Obamacare or some crap. Housing? Who the hell can afford housing in America today? You know, really, who can afford that? Your wages, you know, they pay you. They pay you this little bit of wage. And then all of those things, your food, health care, housing, that's your problem. You see, they don't have to mess with any of that. And they sold people on this and convinced them that slavery had been abolished. Because, you know, they're such good people. It's just immoral the way they enslaved others. We totally don't do that now. And yet, it's the same thing. Nothing's changed except your housing has gotten shittier. Your health care is your own problem. And if you can't afford food, tough. Quit being so lazy, I guess, or something. Slavery went away because they figured out a way that was cheaper. Now they're working on another thing. This, I've talked about it before, this so-called gig economy. You know, you have all these different things. I mean, there's all any number of them. You know what I'm talking about? You know, they've been very clear. They want to move everything. This come out World Economic Forum, the rest of them. They want to move everything to this gig economy model. If you want an idea of what that is, you look at your stuff like, DoorDash. There's any number of these things you know, people do. They go and deliver the food. For some reason, DoorDash is the only thing that pops into my head at the moment. But you know what I'm talking about. It's an example. Think of it as a pilot program. You know, when a company or the government wants to try something new, they launch a pilot program. They don't try to institute it all over at once. They do a pilot program. And you take these food delivery places, or Uber, there's another one, Uber, DoorDash, things like that. These are gig things. You are 1099. That means that when tax time comes around, you discover that you're responsible to pay for your everything. Social Security, they have self-employment tax. It means you're going to have to pay, forget just income tax, you're having to kick in all of these other things. What people will find out really quick doing these things is you won't make no money. Which should not be shocking. You think about it, they don't have to pay for a delivery vehicle, which is going to wear out because of the miles they're putting on it, and it's the hardest miles you can do in town driving. They don't have to pay for your health care. They don't have to pay for any benefits. They don't have to dick with the accounting involved and pulling money out for your Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and all the other BS government taxes that they tax the workers for. They don't do anything. They print you out a 1099 form, say, this is how much we paid you. The rest is your problem. And people do this in desperation. People do this and think they're going to make some money. And what they soon find out is they get a wore out car, which isn't paid for yet, but now it's worn out. They wore their car out. You know, what little money they thought they made, they're going to find out at tax time they actually didn't make that much, and now they have a huge tax bill to pay. They can probably get on the Obamacare for their health care, but that's whatever. And it sucks too. In other words, at the end of it, you find out that you're more poor than you were just working a regular wagey job. Imagine that. Like every new thing they come up with means everybody else gets more poor. Everybody else gets more broke. Everything is designed this way. And when you understand it, you see it everywhere. I've spoke of this before, but it's such a jarring thing. I've watched rural towns be destroyed primarily by Walmart. They go into these. I saw it back when they first started it. And I know I'm being an old person and repeating stories I've told before. But it bears repeating because this practice is used everywhere. Get rid of slavery because they're moral people. They got rid of slavery because it was cheaper to throw a few pennies at some Irishmen and let them starve or whatever the hell. It's not their problem. It's cheaper. They're going to try to move everybody to a gig economy, not because you're going to make more money, but because they make more money. Walmart would go into these towns back in the day and say, look here, we're going to set up this Walmart, and they'd sell everything below cost. And when they lure in the local businesses out of business, they raise the price. And now you go back to those towns and they're shitholes, every last damn one of them. You go through one of these little towns that 50 years ago, 40, 50 years ago, were nice little towns with a community, and now they're meth-addled shitholes. And I guarantee you the ones that are bad, every damn one of them has a big hemorrhoid Walmart growing up like a tumor on the edge of town. When it was a thriving little town, you had all of these little businesses and farming and ranching going on. And the business that was done in town, the money stayed in town. You know, the farmer sold his crops. And he went down and bought a new set of tires for his pickup at the local tire store. And the guy, local guy, running the tire store, got that money. And he went to the local grocery store. The money stayed in town. Circulated. When people came in and visited town, a little more money was added in. Yeah. When Walmart comes to town, now everything in that town that gets spent, the money leaves because it goes to Walmart. And most of that money goes to corporate. You might as well just say it goes to Wall Street. It goes to New York City. All the money is sucked out of the town. People sit around going, what happened to this town? It was such a nice little town. And now it's destroyed. See, everything works that way. In this country, everything is designed where you're going to get poorer. The money is sucked out. They're not introducing the gig economy to make you richer. You are going to be poor. Trust me. You will lose money. You would have a wore out vehicle and you'll be broker. They got rid of slavery because it was cheaper to pay Irishmen a few pennies and let them worry about their own damn food and where to live. And on that pattern. That same pattern over and over again, and yet people still fall for it. They'll come up with the latest thing and say, boy, this is going to make your life better. When you see the pattern, sit back and say, how is this actually going to make people's lives better? Is the corporate / government complex suddenly worried for the first time in history about you having a higher standard of living? When that has never, it's never been the case. Anyway. But look at the time. We got to keep things rolling. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. You know, this is part we're excited for. Like I say, if you're new here, stick for this. Don't sit there and turn it off. I know you're tempted. Like, I don't want to hear none of that. It'll be different. Give it a listen at least one time. Then if you come back, you don't like it, you come back next time, just you can shut it off. But give it a try at least once. The rest of you, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, it's no secret to you regular listeners of the show how I feel about atheist spurgs. Now, I'm always careful to make a distinction between atheists. There's a huge difference between atheist spurgs and the agnostics. Agnostics is just somebody that doesn't believe, and that's whatever. The atheist spurg is the religious zealot of humanism. The atheist spurg is the one that will interject themselves into a topic that has nothing to do with religion, and turn it into being about religion so that they can spread their word of how much they dislike the idea of religion, always in particular the Christian religion. However, that's not what I'm talking about today, because there's another group that I find probably worse. I really do. I find them more abrasive. And that is, of course, the Judeo-Christian value / Christian Zionist types, always led by some heretical false teacher. I'm going to share a quote here. It's a little bit of a read, but I'm going to go ahead and read the whole thing. One of these such type people, a guy by the name, a pastor by the name of John MacArthur. I'm not familiar with this guy, but apparently went on Ben Shapiro's show. So you've already got a taste of where we're going with this. And I wanted to read this whole citation from this appearance on the show, because this is the definition of wolves in sheep clothing, of those who are dressed up as shepherds, but they lead the flock astray. When people teaching false teachings, whether simply out of ignorance or whether out of malice, is it in the fact that you don't wind up with these prominent positions, I don't believe, by accident? You can kind of take a guess where I think that comes from. Now, again, this is a little lengthy, so I'm probably going to stop in spots and because I can't get through the whole thing without vomiting. Let's see what this guy had to say when he was on Ben Shapiro's show. He says, quoting now, "It wasn't until the Persians completely wiped out the Amalekites that God's will was fulfilled in that judgment," Pastor John MacArthur told Shapiro. "Now, you might not like the fact that God is a judge, but when God determines that I'm going to protect my people, Israel, and you're going to attack my people, Israel, I have a plan for my people, Israel. As the New Testament says, so all Israel will be saved. There's coming a kingdom. He will fulfill every promise he ever gave. God is going to preserve that people. And if you're a threat to that people, historically speaking, God says you need to be removed." I have to stop when he's talking about, remember, anytime someone like this talks about Israel in the biblical context, they're saying this modern nation state of Israel is the same because it has the same name. I've always made that, I've made the joke that if I bought a big ranch and called my ranch Israel, would that make it the Israel of the Bible? These people's reasoning, their justification that these are the same people, always comes down to it's the same name. That's it. That's all they have backing this up. They set this place up, called it the same name, and in their brilliant wisdom, in seminary school or wherever the hell they go, that means these are the same people. Now, where they get this all muddled up, you know, they go into the, they don't understand. I'm not a proud person. I'm really not. In fact, I'm humbled. I share this stuff in our Christian specific segment with you all. These are things I believe, I pray, and I believe the Lord shows me. And I believe one of the reasons, and again, I say this from a standpoint of absolute humility. You know, if I get something wrong in my head, that's on me. But for the most part, what I try to share with you all is I spend a lot of time in prayer and seeking the Lord. And when I believe he's shown me a truth about something, I share it with you all. You know, Jesus said, "No one lights a lamp and hides it under a bushel." That's all I do. I have a humble way of viewing this. And I'm always taken aback by how you have somebody here who has a prominent position. Gee, I wonder why. And they're so gosh awful ignorant about the Bible. I don't know. You know, they largely ignore the Old Testament. And what they do cover about the Old Testament is they're trying to apply here is so skewed and so ridiculous that, I mean, you have to remind yourselves these are quote unquote well-educated religious leaders. When you get into God's agreement, the original agreement with the actual nation of Israel, which no longer exists, when you get into that, when you look at that, every single agreement, when they talk about God's original covenant with Israel, and it's got to be these guys, because, I mean, after all, it's the same name. Using these people reasoning, every Mexican that you run into that's named Jesus, he's your Lord and Savior because, after all, same name. It's the same damn reasoning. These people, every time they do this, look, when you go into God's original agreements with Israel, when you actually read it, as I have, multiple times, the first thing you understand is every single thing he said in the original agreement with the ancient actual nation of Israel, not these guys. These guys have nothing to do with it. Every agreement was laid out just like any other contract that people would lay out between themselves. God said, if you do this, this, and this, then I will do this, this, and this. It's very plain. It's very clearly laid out. He gave these stipulations. As long as y'all do this, and he laid out very specifically, this is what y'all have got to do, then I will do this. Now, this Christian Zionism, Judeo-Christian values horseshit these people come up with relies on the premise that God is a moron. It really does. It lies on the premise that he never said the, if you do this part, all they ever focus on is the part where God says, then I will do this. Furthermore, after saying, if you do this, I will do this. After that, God adds on, if you don't do those things, this is what's going to happen. And ultimately, you will lose your nation, which is your people, by the way, not a landmass drawn out on a map. You'll lose your nation. And they did. They did the very things God told them not to do, and they did. They ultimately lost their nation. And no, it's not back by some miracle today. Now, when I say these idiots reading of the Bible and God's original covenant with the original nation of Israel requires the premise that God's a moron, if you yourself signed an agreement, a business agreement with somebody, and it's stipulated that as long as they fulfill these requirements, you will do these things in response, and you're rocking along in this business partnership, and the person you signed the agreement with has yet to fulfill any of their obligations, are you going to go ahead and still do your part? You know, I mean, you may for just a short time, just, you know, out of good faith to make sure you're thinking, well, maybe they're not doing their part because they really don't believe I'm going to hold up my end of the bargain. So I'll go ahead, even though they're not doing what they're supposed to, I'll go ahead in a good faith gesture and do some things here. But as long as they continue to refuse to do anything, you're not going to hold the contract is null and void. God is not stupid. He's not a moron. When he says, and these people, they always fall back on, God doesn't ever go back on his word. And because the Lord said to Israel, who are these guys? Because it's the same name, anybody's got to know. Because the Lord promised Israel, God can't change his mind, and God can't be wrong, and God can't go against his word. Okay. Well, he said, if they don't do this, he's going to do this. They're going to lose their nation, which is the people. Remember, nation is defined as the people. And they didn't do it. And God did what he said. They lost everything. And somehow they've magically appeared again in the Middle East. Let's continue with this tripe here, with this guy's quote here. The Ben Shapiro with Ben Shapiro. I think about that story so often when I think about this. When I think about this, it's like the modern version of Amalek. And until they're wiped out, this is just going to go on and on, MacArthur continued. I know, I don't want to be callous about things, but God has, in his sovereignty, made a decision for the preservation of Israel. Into the future, into the kingdom of Messiah. That's his plan. That's his promise. You can't be a part of that by coming to the Messiah and being a part of his kingdom, but you can be a part of that by coming to the Messiah and being a part of the kingdom, but if you attempt to destroy the very people that are at the heart and the soul of God's plan, then you come under the judgment of God, and I think Israel is acting, even though they're, you know, a secular nation. Even though they're a secular nation in the large sense, because salvation is individual, not national, I think their desire to protect and preserve them and to fight in a really terminal way against those who would destroy them follows the divine pattern of God for the preservation of that people until he fulfills their plan for them, MacArthur added. I love how these supposed Christian Zionist preachers always make Jesus and as the Messiah like a footnote. God's salvation is for Israel, let me go check my bank account. And you can, you know, you goyim can get in there too as a footnote because of Jesus. But really, it's all about Israel. Let's finish this out. I'm not going to be able. You also know in the Old Testament, God said to the children of Israel, which are, remember, according to this guy, these people here today, because same name, that's the depth of the reasoning here. God said to the children of Israel, when you go into the land, destroy the Amalekites, destroy them, because I'm bringing judgment down on their heads for their sins. I mean, they're like a cancer on the world, MacArthur responded. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu opened the war by labeling the Palestinians Amalek, and other Israeli officials followed. Now, you know, whether you want to look at people like this as just ignorant, or if you want to theorize that they're paid shills, whatever it is you choose to do, this is so off base. You know, any basic understanding of the Bible, just basic understanding of the Bible, you know, this guy's full of shit. Now, okay, so let's use this guy's reasoning. He says, God commanded the ancient Israelites who to destroy Amalek. Okay. And now, fast forward, he says, these people there today, because they're using the same name as Israel, they're more than justified to destroy the Palestinians who are Amalek. So wait a minute. On the one hand, he says God's judgment was against Amalek in the Old Testament, so they had to all be destroyed because that was God's judgment. Then he fast forwards and says the Palestinians are Amalek. So was Amalek in this guy's reasoning destroyed or not? Did they also reincarnate into the Middle East, just like somehow the nation of Israel managed to magically be recreated in the Middle East? You see the problem with this guy's so-called reasoning here. He says God's judgment was against Amalek and said they had to be utterly destroyed. Okay, were they or weren't they? Because if the answer is they were, then how the hell are the Palestinians Amalek? And if they were not, then what? Something was wrong with what God said. These people have no business in the Bible. It sounds funny because, you know, I'm not a learned person myself. I'm just me doing my thing. And I will tell you, I often reflect on the fact that the idea of letting just anybody have access to the Bible, I think was kind of a big mistake. That sounds ironic coming from myself. You know, I'm rolling with what I got. But I mean, by and large, looking at the big picture, I think letting just anybody have access to the Bible was a huge mistake. Because you get morons like this that have no understanding of what the hell they're even reading. Going back, I've said this so many times, but God is very specific. Back in the Old Testament, when he made his agreements with Israel, he wrote the contract out quite specifically. If you do, here it is, if you do these things, as long as you do what I'm telling you to do, I will do these things. I'll look after you. I'll bless you. You will have good crops. I won't let your enemies come against you. That's my end. If you do this, it always starts off with the requirements. He follows up with, okay, here's this part of the contract where it stipulates what's going to happen if you don't do these things. If you don't do these things, then I'm going to turn my hand against you. You're going to get defeated. You're going to ultimately lose your nation. And again, they did. God did not make his original agreement with the original nation of Israel like they write laws today, intentionally vague, so you can interpret them later. And we're going to get into that here in a minute, which is an interesting take, I think, if I say so myself. He wasn't vague. He was very specific. These are the things you need to do. If you do those things, I will do these things. If you do not do these things, this is what I'm going to do against you. And this is what's going to be the consequence of that. These morons sit here and they read, God promised Israel. He promised Israel. Like, he, okay, well, didn't Israel have something they were supposed to do? And did they do that? No, they didn't. Well, what did God say would happen if they didn't? Oh, let's take a... Okay, well, then taking that in its entirety, how the hell are these people hanging out there now? The ancient nation of Israel. This isn't even, look, this isn't even that complicated. You know, this is not. He was very specific. He didn't write it vague like laws are written today. And I said we were going to come back to that. Now we're going to. These people, when anytime you have somebody vomit up this nonsense about quote unquote Judeo-Christian values. Anytime you have somebody spew this, like I say, I get so tired when I see atheist Spurgs jump up and talk about, you know, Christianity is just to keep people subservient to the Jews. In a way, though, when you look at these type of people like we're talking about today, you can understand where they get that idea, perhaps. Let me tell you something. Christianity, there is no Judeo-Christian values. Christianity and Judaism are diametrically opposed. When you got someone like this guy we're quoted today, and he's acting like, oh, we're hand in hand with the Jews because, you know, we're really following the same religion. They just haven't caught on to the Messiah thing yet. That's all. Judaism as a religion, I'm not talking as a race, I'm talking as a practice religion, and Christianity as a practiced religion, let me say this very clearly, are diametrically opposed to one another if you have any knowledge whatsoever in how these religions are practiced and the fundamental premise behind each one. This guy goes on and on. This guy goes on and on about how he loves the Jews, supposedly on a religious basis. And he has no idea what the religion's about, or maybe he does and he doesn't care. I don't know. And I'm sorry if I get a little wound up about this, but this is one of those things that just drives me absolutely crazy, is these people. Like I say, as much as I dog on atheist Spurgs because they're just... they are what they are. These people here, they just send me over the edge. Maybe it's a combination of ignorance. Maybe it's a combination of their false teachers. You know, I always look and these guys always magically have a very popular big church full of people. And I look at these people in the audience, you know, if you see pictures of them or they're on TV, whatever the hell. Like I said, I don't even know who this guy is. I don't know how big a church he's got, but obviously he's some sort of prominent one of these people. Otherwise, he wouldn't be on Ben Shapiro's show. Ben Shapiro's not going to ask me to come on. And if he did, I probably wouldn't go. I always think about their audience, and there's a certain percentage of people there that really honestly just want to figure this life thing out and want to come to Jesus and do what God wants. And you've got somebody here, you know, when Jesus spoke, he said... He spoke against the Pharisees, and he said, you know, it's not enough that you yourselves aren't anywhere headed to the kingdom of God, but are going the other direction. You're taking those who would try to attain it and blocking their path. You're leading them off so they don't do it. That is, you know, that is a really foolish and short-sighted thing. Now, I want to stay on topic here because you know how I am. I'm come back to topic, Christianity as a religion and Judaism. There's no Judeo-Christian values because these two religions are practiced in a way they are diametrically opposed to one another. At the heart of Christianity is what? Jesus Christ, right? But what does that mean? Well, as you seek out Jesus and you're constantly reforming your life, it's you can think of it as representative of when the temple was being rebuilt, the first time they tried to rebuild the temple in the Old Testament. You are going through your life rebuilding the temple. You were made in the image of God. You're rebuilding the temple of God. That's a constant work your whole life. That's why you're trying to get closer to him, trying to understand him and become as Christ-like as possible. You are rebuilding the temple of God. You're made in God's image. That means your body. That means who you are. As a person, you spend your life reforming, trying to understand where it's written and it's practiced as God's laws wind up written on your heart. What that means is you're not going through some damn rule book and trying to make sure you're checking off all the boxes. Because that's a very difficult way to try to live. What it means is, as you get closer to God, as you get closer to God through Jesus Christ, you become more Christ-like. You are striving to be like Him. And if you were to go back and look at this checklist, you'd find out you're checking most of the boxes off without even realizing it. Why? Because instead of just trying to make yourself not do things, which is what rule following is, you're doing what you desire to do. Your desire is to be as Christ-like as possible. You're trying to become. The more you know about Him, the more you want to be like Him. Because you start, it reflects in the way you live your life. Does that make sense? You're following God's laws because they are, as it's written on your heart. You're not following a rule book, checking off all the boxes. You're just doing the things you want to do. And as such, you're wanting to do the things of God. It's a voluntary thing versus a forced thing. It's the difference between if you undertook a project to build something because you really wanted to build it versus if somebody grabbed you off the street and started beating you with a whip and told you, you better build this or else. One's an act of love and labor and true growth. The other, you're just being forced through it and you're not learning anything from it except to resent the guy standing there with the whip. The point being, there's a lot of points here. But the point I want to make here is you're growing in God. God's laws are written on your heart, and it's about becoming more like Him and doing the things He has spelled out, living the way He intends for you to live. Because that's what you want to do. God's laws are written on your heart. You're doing what you want to do. You're not going back here and checking off boxes. You're doing God's work. You're following God's laws because that's what you want to do. And you would naturally do that as you become more Christ-like. That's the center of Christianity as a religion, as a true religion, as it's supposed to be practiced. Judaism, on the other hand, is most akin, the best comparison I can give it to, is the whole religion is centered around being a really slick attorney. The whole religion is centered around the idea that you're going to use legalese, word magic, and technicalities to get out of doing God's laws. Like, you've got God's laws over here, and you're going to stretch, you're going to salami slice those laws. You see it in the way U.S. foreign policy is done. You see it in the way laws are written in this country. They're written vaguely. They're followed vaguely. You know, they'll sit there and tell China, we're following the One China principle, but we're just sending weapons to Taiwan in case, you know, we don't support their independence, but in case you want to stop them from being independent. But you see, we're still, you see that, that's Judaism in a nutshell. The whole thing is centered around tricking God. Whether you want to talk about slinging a chicken around and your sins go in the chicken, so they're now I'm free of that. Whether you want to talk about, oh, on this day, we're forbidden to leave our house because God says so. But we put this string around the whole block, and the string is technically counts as my house. So when I go outside and wander around my block, I'm still within my house. You see, God, technically that string is my house, God. So see, it's a technicality. You can think of Judaism as the idea that you're going to get out of any consequences. You're tricking God. You're using legal technicalities. You're going to trip God up in His own words. You're going to take God and say, well, God, you can't convict me of that because look here, technically, like a really slick defense attorney who's getting somebody off that he knows damn well is guilty, but he's trying to twist the law around to suit his own desires, his own agenda. Twisting the law. It's not about following the law. It's about getting out of the law. And using legal technicalities and word trickery and word magic to deceive, to trip God up, tie Him up, paint Him into a corner, and He can't do anything about it. Because you're so clever. You're so slick. You're such a good lawyer. You're so good with legalese and technicalities. This is what Jesus meant when he told the Pharisees, you have replaced the laws of God with your tradition of the elders. Your so-called tradition of the elders. Instead of honoring your mother and father, you say, oh, well, that's a gift of God. And since God can't really do anything with it, I'm going to do whatever I want to with it. And technically, you see, I'm all clear. That is the summary. It's a very base one, obviously. But there is a summary of the two religions set side by side. What the hell do they have in common? Nothing. So anytime you hear one of these idiots go on about Judeo-Christian values and God's promise to Israel, you understand, there's no such thing. These religions, as practiced, are diametrically opposed to one another on a very fundamental level. One is you basically incorporate God's laws and God's will into your heart, and you're actually doing the things God wants to do because that's what you want to do. The other one is, how can I trick God today and do whatever the hell I want? How can I use God's own words against him to trick him up, to deceive him? Even though maybe God's sitting over there knows that I violated his law. I'm so smart, I'm so slick, that there's not a damn thing he can do about it. If he wants to take something out on somebody, here's a chicken. You can take it out on the chicken. Because I'm so smart, so clever. When you understand any of these things, then you understand these Christian, Zionist, zealot, Judeo-Christian value people. They're either intentionally deceiving folks, or they're just really, really, really ignorant. And neither one is a pass. You know, if you're really ignorant, you ain't got no business telling people anything. And obviously, if you're intentionally leading people astray, that's a really, really foolish place. That's a foolish path to take. You know, the Lord said, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? The whole world. And at the cost of his soul. The whole world. God said, if you get offered, remember when Satan was tempting Jesus, he said, look, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world if you'll bow down and worship me. If you got the whole world, what have you gained? In other words, the world, everything in it is temporary. So even if you gained the whole world, when you die and you see the day of the Lord, all that will be taken from you and you're left with nothing. And now you get to spend, now you're in the realm where time doesn't exist. There's no beginning or end to it. And you're in condemnation. The whole world was a stupid price to pay for that. How much more so if you're getting a few crumbs from the table? Maybe you get a check from somebody to promote this. Maybe you're a good guy and you out there, you know, encouraging people to lobby their congressman for more support for Israel because the Palestinians are are Amalek or some nonsense. I don't care how big the check is. If that's the case, you know, that's a stupid trade to make, because at some point, that's going to be gone. That's a whole lot less than the entire world. The Lord said, even if you get the entire world out of the deal, it's a poor bargain. It's a warning. Even if you get the entire world handed to you, it's a poor bargain to be in the realm where time doesn't exist and be in hell, in condemnation. How much more foolish is it to sacrifice your soul for the price of a few crumbs from the table? We'll wrap up on that note. Hope you enjoyed the whole show. Obviously, the Christian specific segment. I hope you really got something out of that. I appreciate you coming here. I hope you'll check out all of our content we got up here for the rest of the week. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.